By conceding power to discord, a large majority of doctors depress mental energy, which is the only real recuperative power. Knowledge that we can accomplish the good we hope for stimulates the system to act in the direction which mind points out. The admission that any bodily condition is beyond the control of mind disarms man, prevents him from helping himself, and enthrones matter through error. To those struggling with sickness, such admissions are discouraging, as much so as would be the advice to a man who is down in the world that he should not try to rise above his difficulties. Experience has proved to the author the fallacy of material systems in general, that their theories are sometimes pernicious, and that their denials are better than their affirmations. Will you bid a man let evils overcome him, assuring him that all misfortunes are from God, against whom mortals should not contend? Will you tell the sick that their condition is hopeless, unless it can be aided by a drug or climate? Are material means the only refuge from fatal chances? Is there no divine permission to conquer discord of every kind with harmony, with truth and love? We should remember that life is God, and that God is omnipotent. Not understanding Christian Science, the sick usually have little faith in it till they feel its beneficent influence. This shows that faith is not the healer in such cases. The sick unconsciously argue for suffering instead of against it. They admit its reality, whereas they should deny it. They should plead in opposition to the testimony of the deceitful senses, and maintain man's immortality and eternal likeness to God. Like the great exemplar, the healer should speak to disease as one having authority over it, leaving soul to master the false evidences of the corporeal senses, and to assert its claims over mortality and disease. The same principle cures both sin and sickness. When divine science overcomes faith in a carnal mind, and faith in God destroys all faith in sin and in material methods of healing, then sin, disease, and death will disappear. Prayers in which God is not asked to heal, but is besought to take the patient to himself, do not benefit the sick. An ill-tempered, complaining, or deceitful person should not be a nurse. The nurse should be cheerful, orderly, punctual, patient, full of faith, receptive to truth and love. It is mental quackery to make disease a reality, to hold it as something seen and felt, and then to attempt its cure through mind. It is no less erroneous to believe in the real existence of a tumor, a cancer, or decayed lungs while you argue against their reality than it is for your patient to feel these ills in physical belief. Mental practice, which holds disease as a reality, fastens disease on the patient, and it may appear in a more alarming form. The knowledge that brain lobes cannot kill a man nor affect the functions of mind would prevent the brain from becoming diseased, though a moral offense is indeed the worst of diseases. One should never hold in mind the thought of disease, but should efface from thought all forms and types of disease, both for one's own sake and for that of the patient. Avoid talking illness to the patient. Make no unnecessary inquiries relative to feelings or disease. Never startle with a discouraging remark about recovery, nor draw attention to certain symptoms as unfavorable. Avoid speaking aloud the name of the disease. Never say beforehand how much you have to contend with in a case, nor encourage in the patient's thought the expectation of growing worse before a crisis is past. The refutation of the testimony of material sense is not a difficult task in view of the conceded falsity of this testimony. The refutation becomes arduous not because the testimony of sin or disease is true, but solely on account of the tenacity of belief in its truth, due to the force of education and the overwhelming weight of opinions on the wrong side, all teaching that the body suffers as if matter could have sensation. At the right time, explain to the sick the power which their beliefs exercise over their bodies. Give them divine and wholesome understanding with which to combat their erroneous sense, and so efface the images of sickness from mortal mind. Keep distinctly in thought that man is the offspring of God, not of man, that man is spiritual, not material, that soul is spirit outside of matter, never in it, never giving the body life and sensation. It breaks the dream of disease to understand that sickness is formed by the human mind, not by matter, nor by the divine mind. By not perceiving vital metaphysical points, not seeing how mortal mind affects the body, acting beneficially or injuriously on the health, as well as on the morals and the happiness of mortals, we are misled in our conclusions and methods. We throw the mental influence on the wrong side, thereby actually injuring those whom we mean to bless. Suffering is no less a mental condition than is enjoyment. You cause bodily sufferings and increase them by admitting their reality and continuance as directly as you enhance your joys by believing them to be real and continuous. When an accident happens, you think or exclaim, "I am hurt." Your thought is more powerful than your words, more powerful than the accident itself, to make the injury real. Now reverse the process. Declare that you are not hurt and understand the reason why, and you will find the ensuing good effects to be in exact proportion to your disbelief in physics and your fidelity to divine metaphysics, confidence in God as all, which the Scriptures declare Him to be. To heal the sick, one must be familiar with the great verities of being. Mortals are no more material in their waking hours than when they act, walk, see, hear, enjoy, or suffer in dreams. We can never treat mortal mind and matter separately because they combine as one. Give up the belief that mind is, even temporarily, compressed within the skull, and you will quickly become more manly or womanly. You will understand yourself and your Maker better than before. Sometimes Jesus called a disease by name, as when he said to the epileptic boy, "Thou dumb and deaf spirit, I charge thee, come out of him, and enter no more into him." It is added that the spirit error cried, and rent him sore, and came out of him, and he was as one dead. clear evidence that the malady was not material. These instances show the concessions which Jesus was willing to make to the popular ignorance of spiritual life laws. Often he gave no name to the distemper he cured, to the synagogue ruler's daughter, whom they called dead, but of whom he said, "She is not dead, but sleepeth." He simply said, "Damsel, I say unto thee, arise." To the sufferer with the withered hand, he said, "Stretch forth thine hand," and it was restored whole like as the other. Homeopathic remedies, sometimes not containing a particle of medicine, are known to relieve the symptoms of disease. What produces the change? It is the faith of the doctor and the patient, which reduces self-inflicted sufferings and produces a new effect upon the body. In like manner, destroy the illusion of pleasure in intoxication, and the desire for strong drink is gone. Appetite and disease reside in mortal mind, not in matter. So also faith, cooperating with a belief in the healing effects of time and medication, will soothe fear and change the belief of disease to a belief of health. Even a blind faith removes bodily ailments for a season, but hypnotism changes such ills into new and more difficult forms of disease. The science of mind must come to the rescue to work a radical cure. Then we understand the process. The great fact remains that evil is not mind. Evil has no power, no intelligence. For God is good, and therefore good is infinite, is all. You say that certain material combinations produce disease. But if the material body causes disease, can matter cure what matter has caused? Mortal mind prescribes the drug and administers it. Mortal mind plans the exercise and puts the body through certain motions. No gastric gas accumulates, not a secretion nor combination can operate apart from the action of mortal thought, alias mortal mind. So-called mortal mind sends its dispatches over its body, but this so-called mind is both the service and message of this telegraphy. Nerves are unable to talk, and matter can return no answer to immortal mind. If mind is the only actor, how can mechanism be automatic? Mortal mind perpetuates its own thought. It constructs a machine, manages it, and then calls it material. A mill at work or the action of a water wheel is but a derivative from and continuation of the primitive mortal mind. Without this force, the body is devoid of action. And this deadness shows that so-called mortal life is mortal mind, not matter. Scientifically speaking, there is no mortal mind out of which to make material beliefs springing from illusion. This misnamed mind is not an entity. It is only a false sense of matter, since matter is not sensible. The one mind, God, contains no mortal opinions. All that is real is included in this immortal mind. Our Master asked, "How can one enter into a strong man's house and spoil his goods, except he first bind the strong man?" In other words, How can I heal the body without beginning with so-called mortal mind, which directly controls the body? When disease is once destroyed in this so-called mind, the fear of disease is gone, and therefore the disease is thoroughly cured. Mortal mind is the strong man, which must be held in subjection before its influence upon health and morals can be removed. This error conquered, we can despoil the strong man of his goods, namely of sin and disease. Mortals obtain the harmony of health only as they forsake discord, acknowledge the supremacy of divine mind, and abandon their material beliefs. Eradicate the image of disease from the perturbed thought before it has taken tangible shape in conscious thought, alias the body, and you prevent the development of disease. This task becomes easy if you understand that every disease is an error and has no character nor type except what mortal mind assigns to it. By lifting thought above error or disease and contending persistently for truth, you destroy error. When we remove disease by addressing the disturbed mind, giving no heed to the body, we prove that thought alone creates the suffering. Mortal mind rules all that is mortal. We see in the body the images of this mind, even as in optics we see painted on the retina the image which becomes visible to the senses. The action of so-called mortal mind must be destroyed by the divine mind to bring out the harmony of being. Without divine control, there is discord, manifest as sin, sickness, and death. The scriptures plainly declare the baneful influence of sinful thought on the body. Even our Master felt this. It is recorded that in certain localities he did not many mighty works because of their unbelief in truth. Any human error is its own enemy and works against itself. It does nothing in the right direction and much in the wrong. If so-called mind is cherishing evil passions and malicious purposes, it is not a healer, but it engenders disease and death. If faith in the truth of being, which you impart mentally while destroying error, causes chemicalization, as when an alkali is destroying an acid, it is because the truth of being must transform the error to the end of producing a higher manifestation. This fermentation should not aggravate the disease, but should be as painless to man as to a fluid, since matter has no sensation and mortal mind only feels and sees materially. What I term chemicalization is the upheaval produced when immortal truth is destroying erroneous mortal belief. Mental chemicalization brings sin and sickness to the surface, forcing impurities to pass away, as in the case with a fermenting fluid. The only effect produced by medicine is dependent upon mental action. If the mind were parted from the body, could you produce any effect upon the brain or body by applying the drug to either? Would the drug remove paralysis, affect organization, or restore will and action to cerebrum and cerebellum? Until the advancing age admits the efficacy and supremacy of mind, it is better for Christian Scientists to leave surgery and the adjustment of broken bones and dislocations to the fingers of a surgeon, while the mental healer confines himself chiefly to mental reconstruction and to the prevention of inflammation. Christian Science is always the most skillful surgeon, but surgery is the branch of its healing which will be last acknowledged. However, it is but just to say that the author has already in her possession well-authenticated records of the cure by herself and her students through mental surgery alone of broken bones, dislocated joints, and spinal vertebrae. The time approaches when mortal mind will forsake its corporeal, structural, and material basis, when immortal mind and its formations will be apprehended in science, and material beliefs will not interfere with spiritual facts. Man is indestructible and eternal. Sometime it will be learned that mortal mind constructs the mortal body with this mind's own mortal materials. In science, no breakage nor dislocation can really occur. You say that accidents, injuries, and disease kill man, but this is not true. The life of man is mind. The material body manifests only what mortal mind believes, whether it be a broken bone, disease, or sin. We say that one human mind can influence another and in this way affect the body. But we rarely remember that we govern our own bodies. The error, mesmerism, or hypnotism, to use the recent term, illustrates the fact just stated. The operator would make his subjects believe that they cannot act voluntarily and handle themselves as they should do. If they yield to this influence, it is because their belief is not better instructed by spiritual understanding. Hence the proof that hypnotism is not scientific. Science cannot produce both disorder and order. The involuntary pleasure or pain of the person under hypnotic control is proved to be a belief without a real cause. So the sick, through their beliefs, have induced their own diseased conditions. The great difference between voluntary and involuntary mesmerism is that voluntary mesmerism is induced consciously and should and does cause the perpetrator to suffer, while self-mesmerism is induced unconsciously, and by his mistake a man is often instructed. In the first instance, it is understood that the difficulty is a mental illusion, while in the second, it is believed that the misfortune is a material effect. The human mind is employed to remove the illusion in one case, but matter is appealed to in the other. In reality, both have their origin in the human mind and can be healed only by the divine mind. You command the situation if you understand that mortal existence is a state of self-deception and not the truth of being. Mortal mind is constantly producing on mortal body the results of false opinions, and it will continue to do so until mortal error is deprived of its imaginary powers by truth, which sweeps away the gossamer web of mortal illusion. The most Christian state is one of rectitude and spiritual understanding, and this is best adapted for healing the sick. Never conjure up some new discovery from dark forebodings regarding disease and then acquaint your patient with it. The mortal so-called mind produces all that is unlike the immortal mind. The human mind determines the nature of a case, and the practitioner improves or injures the case in proportion to the truth or error which influences his conclusions. The mental conception and development of disease are not understood by the patient, but the physician should be familiar with mental action and its effect in order to judge the case according to Christian Science. If a man is an inebriate, a slave to tobacco, or the special servant of any one of the myriad forms of sin, meet and destroy these errors with the truth of being by exhibiting to the wrongdoer the suffering which his submission to such habits brings, and by convincing him that there is no real pleasure in false appetites. A corrupt mind is manifested in a corrupt body. Lust, malice, and all sorts of evil are diseased beliefs, and you can destroy them only by destroying the wicked motives which produce them. If the evil is over in the repentant mortal mind, while its effects still remain on the individual, you can remove this disorder as God's law is fulfilled and reformation cancels the crime. The healthy sinner is the hardened sinner. The temperance reform felt all over our land results from metaphysical healing, which cuts down every tree that brings not forth good fruit. This conviction that there is no real pleasure in sin is one of the most important points in the theology of Christian Science. Arouse the sinner to this new and true view of sin. Show him that sin confers no pleasure, and this knowledge strengthens his moral courage and increases his ability to master evil and to love good. Healing the sick and reforming the sinner are one and the same thing in Christian Science. Both cures require the same method and are inseparable in truth. Hatred, envy, dishonesty, fear, and so forth make a man sick, and neither material medicines nor mind can help him permanently, even in body, unless it makes him better mentally, and so delivers him from his destroyers. The basic error is mortal mind. Hatred inflames the brutal propensities. The indulgence of evil motives and aims makes any man who is above the lowest type of manhood a hopeless sufferer.